You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Friday, 17 January, Chinese house price index data came out an hour ago, minus 5.3% year on year. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in South Africa. On the show today, Alex Day from Mthombo Wealth. Richmond update, that saw the stock at all-time highs. And PPC, a new 3 billion rand cement plant in the Western Cape. I chat with Simon Fillmore from Independent Securities. Looking ahead to 2025, I also want to chat Trump. I know it's been a lot of talk around him, but I think we all think it's overly binary. I think there's a lot more nuance to it. And thoughts from me on fees, the good and the bad. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb. The Prudential Authority moves to provisionally liquidate KZN-based Itala. National Treasury assures retail depositors their deposits will be protected by a government guarantee, subject to conditions. News 24, 2 years on, Reserve Bank is still fighting to access Marcus Juster's seized phone and computers. Juster objected to releasing the data, claiming it contained privileged correspondence, a stance upheld by the executor of his estate. Morning markets, US was red, S&P down 0.2, NASDAQ off 0.7. Over in the east, mostly red. Sydney's down 0.2, Tokyo's off 0.9%, Hong Kong is up 0.5%, and Tencent also down 0.9%. Commodities, mostly red, gold the exception, 2,746, Brent 81.60, Platinum 945, Palladium 950. The Rand is 18.82, Bitcoin $1,001.400, top 40 opening call 220 points or 0.3% to the green.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Alex Dace from Mthombo Wealth. Alex, appreciate the early morning time. Richmond put out a quarterly update, third quarter ending December. It looked good on the surface, absolutely. Best ever quarter, 6.2 billion euros of sales. Good growth in Americas. China's still struggling. Market pushed the stock up 14.5%. I mean, were we missing a picture? Was the update that great? Your thoughts on the update and Richmond?
Good morning, Simon. It certainly was a good update and a remarkable share price reaction, in my view. I certainly did not expect a company like Richmond to move without a mount. Mm. But saying that, it was very, very good. So the market was penciling in pretty much, call it 1% to 3% top-line growth, and it delivered 10%. So perhaps the signal is that there's a bit of a turnaround now in the luxury good market. You also saw some of the other global luxury goods share prices recovering mm-hmm. on this. It was obviously driven by jewelry, did incredibly well, up I think over 14%. And the watches, even though it declined, the decline is less than expected. So perhaps it's also a little bit better there. Americas did exceptionally well, specifically the U.S. consumer. So yeah. They are spending money. They're also traveling the world, going to Europe, buying their... And in Asia, even though China is still weak, overall Asia, you see much better numbers from other parts of it. For example, South Korea doing over 20%, Japan doing 19%, and so forth. And as always with Richmond, they absolutely print cash. They grew cash by over 1.8 billion euros in this quarter. And they're sitting with a net cash of almost 8 billion. So lots of dry powder for potential deals or dividends or whatever the case might be. So I think, yeah, that so overall, it was certainly a very, very good update. I think perhaps there was also some investors perhaps stuck on the short side of it and had to buy back the shares after this update. But the share has been incredibly strong since December. And I think, yeah, the stock now probably looking closer to fair value. But certainly, it's been an incredible ride over the last couple of months. I think stock is up close to 50% or so if you bought from the lows. So, yes, very impressive update and share price movement.
And a quick last point. I mean, a lot of folks have said, oh, China's their weak spot. I mean, China was weak, but frankly, the rest of the business is doing blazing. They can survive a weak China, as indicated by this update.
Yeah, I mean, every region is pretty much up double digits, other than Asia, which is down 7. So if you think of Europe, Middle East, Japan, and America's all up at regional 20% in constant currency. So that's a phenomenal number, yes. And China being slightly better than expected, or Asia being slightly better than expected, with China still lagging. So that's perhaps also a tailwind from going forward.
PPC, they are announcing a 3 billion best-in-class cement plant down in the Western Cape. Essentially, it's replacing an existing plant. We'll have some more capacity. The key point here is they're talking the line from the SENSE announcement, meaningful lower production costs. I get that. What surprised me is we don't have, I don't see massive demand for cement in South Africa, but I suppose it is about those production costs. But the market was a bit sanguine. It took the stock off 3.5%.
It did come a bit of a surprise. I think grateful for Africa to see this type of investment happening, specifically in the Western Cape, where there hasn't been any real investment when it comes to cement in like over 40 years. So that's a big move, and perhaps a vote of confidence of what we can expect going forward. So these plants in the Western Cape that PPC currently own is between 40 and 60 years old. Yeah. So they are very, very old, inefficient. And if you look at PPC margins, and I'm specifically referring to EBITDA margins, it's declined substantially over the last decade or two, because these plants are simply uneconomical at the moment. Mm-hmm. And what PPC is concerned is that China is investing quite aggressively in Africa, building new plants. We know, of course, we've also got a Mamba plant in South Africa, mm-hmm. and these plants are much more efficient. So as a result, they're much more competitive when it comes to the price war, which we have seen. So PPC's argument is that they need to spend money that will be a better capital allocation than simply maintaining the current assets, which makes sense on face value. Mm-hmm. And we'll have to see how this pans out. But if they can deliver the returns that they are saying, then it will be a value add. There are risks, of course. The obviously comes with a lot of debt, over $3 billion. All once off. There will be a payment at the end and so forth. But also the debt after the dividend, even though they are guiding, they're going to try to maintain the dividend. Mm. I think it's most likely the dividend will be under pressure while this period. But the building period is only 2 years. So we expect this plant to be finished by end of next year. And they really want to start Q2 this year. So exciting times, I think, for the business. Shareholders will be on the fence because I think shareholders were expecting, more cash in their own pocket. Now they need to invest in this new project.
Yeah, I take your point. But those plants are old. I mean, they are, and as you say, deeply inefficient. And that is what PPC here is aiming for. We leave it to Alex Dace, Portfolio Manager at Nthumbo Wealth. Always appreciate the early morning time. Our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter, is around that Richmond update. It traded all-time highs. It closed a little off the all-time highs. But still, as Alex said there, it's been a massive run in the stock. Do you hold it? Perhaps you prefer others. Perhaps this is best in class. Perhaps you did miss it. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Standard Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Simon Fulmore. He's the Chief Investment Officer at Independent Securities. Simon, appreciate the time. A recent note that you put out talks a fair bit about President-elect Trump. Of course, he comes in on Monday. One of the key points I take away from it is that he's perhaps not as binary as many think for markets. There are things we just don't know. There are things which would be perhaps good in the short term, others which might be bad. It's not as simple as to say, well, it's Trump and therefore it's all either good or either bad.
Yes, I think that's a very good point. And obviously, the inauguration is next week, and it'll take some time for all of his policies to filter through and to see exactly what is intended. But I think because it is his second term, he's only got 4 years, mm-hmm. I think he's going to hit the ground running and come out firing out of the gates with a whole range of executive orders at the get-go. And I think as we've seen as his strategy historically, he comes initially with some very wild demands and ultimately settles somewhere in the middle. So I think we'll see a similar playbook this time. And I don't think anyone's really expecting tariffs to the degree that he has announced historically. And as we all know, that he does use the stock market as a barometer of his success. And certainly if tariffs are ratcheted up quite quickly, it would have a negative impact on inflation, which would have a direct feedback into the stock market. So we're not expecting him to be too aggressive on tariffs initially.
I take your point on tariffs 100%, and I like the point around the stock market as sort of the gauge he uses. One thing he has talked around is tax cuts. Some of his tax cuts are set to expire, and he will obviously try and renew them. He's looking at reducing corporate tax, high owner taxes. This is good in the short term, but it does add to that US debt, which is, what, north of $33 trillion already. Short term, good. Long term, more of a complexity.
Yes, I think he is going to struggle to find support to push that through. It's been touted that he's looking to push the corporate tax rate down to 15%. Mm-hmm. And you know, ultimately, that does need to be funded somehow. And I think that's where the mathematics gets a little bit difficult. You know, sure, there is Elon Musk with his Department of Government Efficiency, but whether they can extract enough efficiencies on that side of the equation to offset what they're going to lose from taxes is another question. And I think also with the debt, the big issue is there's probably around 40 or 50% of it that matures over the next 2 years. And yeah, because of interest rates increasing, as that debt matures and needs to be refinanced, that refinancing cost will be higher. So that's another headwind for US economic markets as we see it.
Absolutely. And at this point in time, I mean, valuations on US markets after two stellar years, S&P and NASDAQ, there really is no wiggle room for disappointment from earnings over the next year.
Yes. And I think for us, this is the biggest sticking point that we're seeing at the moment. And there are lots of unknowns that we can debate about, mm-hmm, and you know, what Trump's policies are going to have on the market and the impact and whether his pro-growth strategy will ultimately prevail. But even if you push that all to the side, the one area that concerns us is the valuation on the market, specifically US equities. And you know, for instance, the S&P 500 is trading at a P/E of about 21.6. That's based on earnings of about $271 per mm-hmm share. And that P/E of 21.6 compares to its longer-term average of about 16 times. And I think, you know, we've seen a couple of years of good earnings growth, and the market's implying that there's going to be at least 10% growth this year and another 10% next year. And I think, to me, that seems a little bit of a stretch at this stage. And when we drill it down into a company level, obviously the overvaluation of certain tech shares is well known, but we're also seeing that apparent in quality shares. It's very difficult to buy a high quality company at a good price. And I think for us, one of the stocks that signifies the overvaluation of US equities is a company like Costco. It's an unbelievable business and it's just exceptional return on capital, great management team, good margins. Its employees love working there. Its consumers and clients love it. But on a P/E of 50 for a fairly mature retailer, it just seems too high for us. And we find that across the board for many high quality businesses where you're just having to pay P/E ratios of north of 35 seems a little bit high at this stage. So we're just taking a fairly defensive stance on US equities at this stage.
Absolutely. That Costco story gets me every time. I have to double check the PE, but there it is. But the one place you do talk around is sort of AI adjacent. In other words, you know, not the Mag 7, not the NVIDIAs, but you talk around like biotech, which could really use AI as a process to speed up their processes. And there might be some potential there. They're not directly AI, but they benefit from it.
Yes. And I think, you know, in the biotech space, overall, I think it obviously had a massive run into COVID. And since then, earnings haven't met expectations. And obviously, demand, you know, specifically for vaccines has dropped. We just need to look at what happened to Moderna's share price mm-hmm a couple of days ago on the back of its results. I think the share was down about 17%. So that sector has been under pressure for the last couple of years. But for us, it would certainly be one of the places that could benefit the most from implementing AI into the business, and you know, whereby just the cost and the time to test and market a new drug is significantly condensed. And these days, to develop a blockbuster drug typically costs well over $1 billion. So it's a fairly expensive endeavor. And at the same time, it takes considerable time, a number of years, before a drug gets approval and is ultimately launched. But using AI, that can be condensed quite significantly. So that's an area that we think, you know, could potentially benefit and isn't talked about as being a direct benefactor of AI spend at the moment.
And then what about you talk around qualities priced for perfection, so is tech. What about value shares? What about emerging markets, which have had a tough many, many years? Is that a space or spaces we should perhaps start to be looking at?
Yes, we believe so. And it's quite interesting. The theme's pretty consistent over the last 20 or 25 years, whether one looks at value shares, emerging market shares, all small cap shares, mm-hmm. All have underperformed their relative opposite quite significantly over that time frame, which is quite unusual. But I think when we're faced with relatively expensive US equities, there are opportunities in each of those spaces that potentially do offer good returns over the next couple of years in an environment where US equities either are flat or are negative just because they're at such a high base.
We'll leave it there. That's Simon Fillmore, Chief Investment Officer, Independent Securities. Appreciate the time. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Some thoughts for me on fees, the good and the bad. There are no free lunches. I totally accept that. But that doesn't mean all fees are good. Some of them, a transaction fee, yeah, 100%. I get the transaction fee. Less is always going to be better. And beware the minimums. You know, you might see a very small transaction fee, but the minimum then needs you to trade at a certain level. Otherwise, you don't effectively get that. But truthfully, in the long term, you know, 50 Rand here or there, or 0.1% here or there, is not a biggie. If you're buying a share for decades, if you get a 10 bagger, that 0.1% or 50-100 bucks up front is not going to markedly change the game. Platform fees, I mean, I appreciate you, there's a cost to running a platform. I hate the percentage fee, so it's charged as a percentage as your portfolio. The logic there is, as my portfolio grows, I pay more, but there's zero extra cost or effort from the platform. I don't understand the percentage there. It should be a set fee. It should say we charge X. And sure, that fee will rise over time as inflation and the like, but there's certainly, I think, no excuse for a platform fee and of a percentage. And we have seen more recently in the news, Signia have introduced a platform fee that will come in April, of course, towards the end of 2023. Easy Equities did the same. Signia is a percentage. Easy Equities is a flat fee, and I much prefer the flat. Performance fees, I mean, even more scratching heads here. Sure, in theory, they are fine. You make me richer, you get to share in some of it. Absolutely not unhappy with that. But there's a couple of issues. And the first is, what's your benchmark? We're seeing a lot of moving away from using an index as a benchmark to a benchmark of our peers. In other words, as long as I'm in the top half of everyone doing this, then all's good. Well, no, I don't like that at all, because you could be the top half, but you could be underperforming the index. Why does that matter? Well, because quite simply, if you underperform the index, I can buy it. But then what happens when you take your performance fee and then you underperform for many years? So now we need high watermarks. In other words, you can't take more performance until you get above where you were previously. That, of course, doesn't help if I've exited the product. So what about, I don't know, a reverse performance fee? If you do great, you get a little bit of the extra money you've made me. Seems fair. If you do terrible, you get a little bit less of the fee that you would have charged. To me, seems a whole lot fairer. That's it for today. I was chatting with Ian Anderson from Merchant West Investments yesterday, talking local REITs. They had an epic 2024. We asked you, what do you expect for this year? Half of you said, and you agreed with what Ian was saying, you're getting 8-9% dividend yield from the get-go. Loving that. That kind of locks in almost your high single-digit return. A quarter each was saying, you're expecting a tough year. The rest were saying another storming year ahead. This podcast is brought to you by StanLib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nubukle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating and a 5-star review in your podcatcher of choice. We'll chat again Monday. The importance of inflation expectations.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.